I'd like to introduce our speaker today. Our speaker is Gary Peterson. He's a member of Prairie, so most of you who are members know who he is. He's president of Peterson Appraisal Group and Religious Property Valuations, and I bet hardly anyone knew that. He's appraised commercial real estate for over 20 years, primarily in the Chicago metropolitan area. He has an MAI, and I think he'll have to tell us what that is, designation, which is the highest designation you can get in commercial real estate appraisal. He also has an undergraduate degree with majors in business administration and psychology from Augustana College in Illinois, and a master's degree in business administration from the University of Nevada. Prior to starting his company appraising religious facilities, he did a great deal of research into why churches fail and factors that can help predict success or failure in a congregation. Please welcome Gary Peterson to talk about church life cycles and promoting growth.
Thank you. Good morning. Yeah, so about a year ago, we started a new appraisal service. I've always done general commercial appraisal in the Chicago market, and we'd been doing a ton of churches, and so about a year ago, we started religious property valuations, which appraises churches. And part of that process was just doing a lot of research to see, you know, what's going on in the church market. And as I was doing that research, I, you know, naturally was applying some of it to what's going on in Prairie. And one thing we've noticed over the last few years, and we've done a lot of churches over the last 15 years, is you see more and more churches in trouble than used to be. And there's a lot of reasons for that. And so, like when we used to do appraisals, you just say, if you're doing appraising a church, find three church comps and appraise the church. Now what we have to do is start going into what's the census of the church, what's their population, how have they been doing over the years, because we're seeing a lot more frequently where churches are getting in trouble and they're just closing down. And so sometimes you have a church building where it's not going to be a church anymore because there aren't enough people to do it. What became apparent to me as we're doing all of these churches is that a lot of congregations pretty much stick their head in the sand and hope the problem goes away. That's how I manage my company, and I've been lucky so far, but it doesn't really work that well in a congregation. If the population starts to slide by like more than 25% in 2 or 3 years, that's when the alarm bells go off and everybody says, all right, what are we gonna do? Well, that's called a death spiral in the churches, and it's too late at that point. So you need to start being progressive and thinking about this while you're still stable or growing, not after you start shrinking. So I wanna talk a little bit today about, you know, where the market is, and at more practical level, and I'm certainly not a church guy, I'm more of a numbers guy, but what some of the research, what they're saying you need to focus on to promote growth instead of slowly die. In the United States, about 20.4% of the people on average attend church regularly in the United States. Some surveys say it's as high as 40%, but people tend to overestimate their godliness. And because most people realize, and just so I can tell you, a lot of the research is done, research in churches and what's going on is difficult. It's very spotty, and you know, it just takes hours of this and that. But we did rely very heavily on the American Church Research Project, which took statistics and data from over 200,000 churches between 1990 and 2006, and that was by far where we found the best data. But anyway, in 1990, about 20.4% of people attended church regularly. Regularly attending church is defined as 3 out of 8 services, okay? Which isn't all that regular, but that's as good as you get. In 2005, it went from 20.4% to 17.5% attended regularly. They're projecting by 2020, it's gonna drop to 14.7% regularly attend. Now, in the South and in the Midwest, it's a few percent higher. In the Northeast, it's a few percent lower. In the West, it's a few percent lower. But the general trend is going south. In the Roman Catholic Church, for example, and again, I don't have any specific Unitarian because it's relatively small, but for for a few examples, in 2000, the Roman Catholic Church in Madison had 79,177 members. In 2005, it was 67,584. In Milwaukee, in 2000, it was 230,000. It was down to 196,000 in 2005. In Rockford, they did better. In 2000, they had 113,000, and it was about 109,000 in 2005. More specific for Prairie, Kate was good enough to give me a lot of the statistics over the last 20 or 30 years. In the 1980s, we averaged 105. In the 1990s, we averaged 113. In the 2000s, we averaged 95 and a half. I'm not sure who the half is. And in 2010, we've averaged 92. Right at the moment, we're 91. Part of the problem, even though with any kind of membership, is how do you define membership? It's very difficult to say. So at a small church like this or congregation, it's probably easier to do it. But you know, statistically, and this is part of the problem with any analysis on congregations and churches, is it's so gray. How many people come here every week? Who knows? Nobody counts. So, I counted a few times before this, but in general, okay. And of the four or five samples that I didn't know Mary counted or I would have done that. We averaged about, of the four or five samples in the fall and spring that I did, we averaged about 50 people and about 14 kids of attendance. And one interesting thing is, even though church attendance has been dropping in the United States relatively consistently, only about 1.1% of churches close their doors every year. And that's not very many. I mean, it could be a lot more than that. But that isn't necessarily a good thing either, because one of the things that when I'm reading these things, at least at a macro level with like church life cycles, the fact that a church doesn't, you know, sometimes it would just be better for the church to die, for certain churches. Because a lot of churches, they may be well endowed, they may have only a dozen members anymore, they may not be doing anything, they may just meet once a week and the building is closed the rest of the time, but they can survive on life support forever. Until the last person dies, they're there. So a lot of times the fact that there's such a low percentage of actually going out of business, so to speak, doesn't necessarily mean it's a good thing. A church is, or a congregation is supposed to serve a purpose, and that isn't just to exist. It hopefully is doing some good in the community. The most important factors for growth or decline in a church at the macro level is population. If you're living in an area with population growth, you're more likely to be going up in a population. If you're in a level population area or a declining population area, you're likely to be shrinking. That makes sense, especially considering that if the overall attendance is dropping a few percent every 5 years anyway, if your population isn't going up, you've got a smaller and smaller pool to pull from. So by far, and Madison is somewhat lucky because we still have a population growth. So that's the number one factor, bar none, is what's going on with the population levels. So we're somewhat fortunate in Madison because we're still a growing area. Affluence of the community, the more affluent is more likely to do better than a less affluent community. Education, the more educated generally do better than the less educated communities. The age of the church and the constituents, churches tend to grow, or more likely to grow, until they're about 40 years of age, and then they gradually lose members and are in a state of decline. 57 to 66% of churches, depending on the congregation, are in a state of decline after 40 years. It may be a slow state of decline, but they're in a state of decline. The older the members of the church, the slower the growth, oftentimes because they don't. So it's the age of the population of your congregation, because you know, older, if they're older, they don't tend to not have as many children, and they may be slower to adapt to change. Also related to age, the median age in the United States is 37. The average age for a Presbyterian is 58. The average age for a Methodist is 61. That's a problem. Now, although I think most people would realize, as you age, as you get older, you're more likely to go to church. So there's a lot of stuff kind of crosses over against each other. So the core of many churches or many congregations are the seniors. But it can be a two-edged sword, because sometimes that can also be, they may be more resistant to change too, or whatever, and so it can be a blessing and a curse. The size of church is a factor. If you have a very small church, 1 to 50 people, or the mega churches, 1,000 plus, in general, they tend to be doing better, and then everybody in the middle tends to be doing worse. There's obvious exceptions in all cases, but that's just as a general rule. Gender makeup, 57 to 66% of churchgoers in the United States are women, depending on the congregation. Younger and growing churches tend to be closer to 50-50. It's rarely ever that way, and have a more balanced population. In the five samples I did here, we were at 65% or within a percent of that almost every time, of women, 35% men. Okay, so that would not be considered a positive. This is just a side note that I thought was interesting. One of the biggest predictors for children to continue to attend services or congregations as they grow up is whether the father attended church. Not the mother, but whether the father did. And whether the father attended regularly. And then finally, the location of the church is another factor. If you are in a rural or small town, you're more likely to be declining. If you are in a city or a suburb, you're more likely to be increasing. There's a lot of variables and a lot of stuff mismatches all over the place. But I think the overriding thing is the demographics are the number one issue, because you're fighting a slowly declining attendance, you know, overall. Now, church life cycles. You can have a huge variation on how long a church typically survives. Very few churches ever go more than like 80 or 90 years or 100 years. A few do, but most have a goal, have a purpose, and then that purpose is achieved, and maybe the demographics change and the church dies. It isn't necessarily a bad thing. Sometimes if you have a church that really isn't doing anything anymore and just gets very small, it might be better off to just close it down and a new church starts and that has a lot more energy and achieves a lot more things. So at least at a macro level, a church dying isn't always the end of the world. But when you're talking about your own church, it's always a different story. The way the gurus of the church world define it, the birth stage is usually from 1 to 5 years, where it's heavy growth. From 6 to 15 is maturity. And then from 15 to 50 years, it tends to plateau. And this is a critical area, because here the and this is where we are right now. Here the congregation needs to either refocus towards new birth and growth, or start to decline. And I'll talk a little bit about more that in a second. From age 60 to 80, you start to get the decline and dropouts if there's no refocus of the church. And it's difficult to stop declining membership once that occurs. And at 80, it's a death or a restart. And a restart means sometimes they just close the church, give it to another congregation or sell it to another congregation, and maybe another church starts in the same area, or maybe not. A good example would be, I do a lot of stuff in Chicago. There are some Polish churches, you know, very heavy Catholic. Demographics are shifting. Some of these areas are now heavily Hispanic. Well, where you may have had a 300-person Polish church, now, and they're doing all their stuff in Polish, you know, the Spanish guys come in and say, you know, no hable, I don't even know how to say it in Polish. So sometimes it isn't a bad thing, but it's just something that happens. Life cycles are not always smooth and predictable. Sometimes attendance swings are normal. You know, we've had them, you know, lows and highs and stuff like that. But if you have a consistently downward trend and you start losing a lot, you know, you can be in trouble. The most important point that I saw in the life cycles is once you're in the maturity phase, you need to either need to keep positive momentum going, and that what happens is people either decide to protect what they've got, or they decide to try to keep growing and keep reaching out. What tends to happen is the institution starts inertia of just, we're going to do our normal service, and it becomes more of a focus on protecting the church and just trying to maintain, and less of a focus on reaching out to the community and growing. And it's a very subtle thing, it's usually not a conscious choice, but once that happens, you slowly start to decay. And that's what they've seen with the studies that occur. So you make, it can take 30 years to die. So it's not it's not something that has to happen today or tomorrow, but over time, you know, I'm 50 now. I was 40, you know, about 2 weeks ago. It occurs. The factors for decline, the biggest factors are, one is demographics, and population, again, is number one. We're doing a lot of appraisals on the south side of the city. African Americans tend to have a higher percentage of church attendance. But a lot of African Americans are moving to nicer areas out of the south side of Chicago. And some areas of the south side of Chicago are beautiful and some are not. And we're doing a lot of appraisals right now where a lot of these churches, or not a lot, but several, are in trouble. And it's mainly because the people aren't there. The economy is certainly not helping either. But, you know, when people move, things happen. So population loss, and then that's the mix, whether it's Polish to Spanish or whatever. There's also something called the triple elder effect. If you have an older physical church, if you have older members, and you have an older pastor, these three factors combine to make it more difficult to increase your population, and it makes it more likely for you to resist change. Part of the way you get younger members is obviously younger members need to join. So if they're joining, are they more or less likely to join if, like, and that's what they talk about, this triple elder effect. So that's why it's important that you keep trying to bring in new people and families and all of that stuff. Another factor for decline is the rapid pace of change, internet, computers, et cetera. Especially at smaller churches, you tend to have a handful of volunteers that do a lion's share of the work. And that can be a good thing and a bad thing. God bless them, because we need the people that are doing the volunteer work. They can also, though, be maybe resistant to change, or maybe they don't like the internet, or maybe they don't whatever. So, you know, and most of the volunteers that are doing most of the work will tell you they would love to have more people help, but the reality is this core group is making most of the decisions because there's other people aren't stepping up to the plate, and they may be resisting change, or they may not, you know, maybe you need some new people coming in, if they can get them, to help institute some of this institutional change and make it more flexible. Long service by the same volunteers can lead to decline, mismanaged conflict resolution, relational dysfunction. I'm try to stay oblivious to most of it, but I know it's out there. If you get two people in a room, you usually have some kind of conflict. That's why in my company, I manage by ignoring it and hoping it goes away. And then debt can be a problem. Now we at Prairie don't have debt, so we are just in financial bliss, apparently. So in terms of trying to turn around now, what can you do to enhance growth? The 2 points or 3 points that I got about all of my research was, and one thing that stood out and is kind of obvious, but that 100% of new growth comes from visiting guests. 100%, of course. But, so what, when you ask, what can I as an individual do? Well, when you have a guest, it isn't, you know, it's they've already made a little bit of risk, and they've come to a new place. Well, some of the people are very interesting. I talked to Lori today. Her dog, she wants to get a dog like I've got, and I've got a blue-eyed and a brown-eyed Bernese Mountain dog. And her dog, Dana, has a two colored eyes too. But anyway, that wasn't why she was interesting, but it was one of the reasons. But when people come, it is critically important, and you know, Rose does a wonderful job of greeting guests and making them feel comfortable. And it isn't just Rose's responsibility, it's every responsibility. And if somebody comes in, and like, I love dogs, I've got a picture of my dog right here. When Lori came in today as a guest, and I'm sorry for pointing you out. Well, that was something that was I found interesting, so I went up and I started talking to her. She's obviously a little nervous, she's never been here before. You guys have been here before. If you see somebody that might be interesting, go say hello. I mean that is one of the most critical things a congregation can do, relates to how we treat guests. Most people, according to what I've read, decide within the first 10 minutes of showing up of whether they like that congregation or not. They haven't even heard the person, or nobody's even talked up front yet. So, and they've already made the decision. So if a family comes in with kids, well, maybe it'd be better if the kids we've got are running around upstairs being a nuisance instead of downstairs being a nuisance. Because at least if somebody walks in with a couple kids, they can start being a nuisance together. But so but that first 10 minutes, that first contact is critical. You know, if you are, you know, if some younger people are here, maybe some of the younger people in our congregation want to go say hello or whoever. I mean, the point is, it is critical. It's the first 10 minutes. It's the facilities, how they look. It's the kids. It's the demographics, and it's the friendliness. And it's your responsibility. It's the number one thing of what needs to be done or what could be done. In a typical church, and I know people get offended if I say church, but and the studies are based on Christian churches, this thing. So I'm just being a generic spread. 6 to 10% of the membership will go away every year. And that's because people die, people move, people become disinterested, okay? 6 to 10%. So that means you need to replace that 6 to 10% just to stay where you were. To support slight growth of your visitors, 14 to 16% should join, okay? To have rapid growth, 25% would join every year. So that's not a small, those are not small numbers, but you've got to fight just to maintain. So these new visitors, one, they're great additions. A lot of them are very interesting people, and it is your responsibility to go and really outreach, because a lot of these people are very interesting. And declining memberships typically get 5 to 8% or less of visiting people. And if you're only getting 5, 8% of the people that come every week, you are losing membership, okay? And then how do you, so then the next question becomes, how do you get people to visit the church? Any more today? Okay, and I know we've had some things where Jane wrote an article, our former minister, and some people came for whatever. The internet, though, is pretty much the main way today. And I've done, 2 or 3 months ago, I mentioned this to Nick, I did a search for Unitarian churches in Madison. So I probably said Madison Unitarian churches. Google comes up with 10 on everything. We weren't on page one. There's only three. I don't know how many, what are there, three or four? Three? Well, we didn't make the top 10, and there's only three. So, and I'm not even sure if we made the top 20, for that matter. That's not a good thing. In my company, and I only know some of the stuff about the internet just because I've just been spending, we've just done a few new websites and stuff with my company. I have one website that I have searched 500, 800, 1,000 in, and I still can't find my company in it. And I've got another one that consistently, or two of them, that consistently rank where I get 2 or 3 hits in the top 10 every time. And the problem is, if you have a website with no content, and content is not a calling card saying, hi, I sell widgets, and they're really good quality, and here's my address. If that's, that's not content, okay? Everybody can say that. And you need to have, it needs to be, maybe we're engaged in these projects, and you have to have more in-depth stuff about what's going on, about, maybe service projects you're involved in, and stuff like that. And as a side, and I don't want to get too much into internet, website hits. If we changed our website, not Prairie, that stays the same, but if we changed our website to MadisonUnitarians.com, you would get 5 times more hits than you do right now. You can once they click on that, you could still be Prairie UU. I mean, I've got my company, it's CommercialAppraiser.com, one of them, because people search for commercial appraisers. They don't search for Peterson Appraisal, they search for commercial appraisal. Once they click on commercial or search commercial appraisal, then it goes to Peterson Appraisal because my website is CommercialAppraiser.com. I outcompete virtually everybody in the Chicago market on website hits, not because I'm brilliant, but because I got lucky with this name 15 years ago. But there's a few things that can be done that don't cost a lot of money. But website driving and then getting people to at least find our thing, and then when people do come in. The other item, and that's what I actually wanted to spend more of the time with, was talking about either you can have an outward focus or you can have an inward focus that's just based on preservation. And by an outward focus, it's people are attracted to congregations that are more active in the community and that they're more active in the world. And if people are just coming here every week, hear a service, go home, that may not have as much draw. If you're doing things out in the community, for example, Paula has, you know, stand up periodically talking about a food kitchen that we do somewhere. Okay, I'm 3 out of 8, so I'm a frequent comer. But I've missed. So, and maybe we've had somebody from the food pantry come up and go into a little more detail about what this service is, okay? Pennies for Peace. I know I put pennies in almost every time I come. I have no clue what it is. I'm serious. Even though I've invested at least 30 cents in this project, I don't know what it is. It might be worth having somebody come up and speak about Pennies for Peace. I know we've started something with eyeglasses, where we brought eyeglasses to Haiti just to collect eyeglasses through Bosch. Maybe we want to have somebody from Bosch come in and speak and say, here's things you can do in the community. There's other things that we can be doing that don't cost a lot of money. There's projects in India where you can, you know, if you can speak English in India, you have a far better life than if you don't. And I know of some projects where people Skype, this costs nothing. You have to get up pretty early in the morning because of the time differences, like at 5 or 6, which may not be early for some. But where you could have conversations every week with some, like an orphan in India, I'm aware of a specific program, where you help them learn English. There are things in Guatemala where kids have cleft lips and they're born with cleft lips. And there's a service company down there that helps find these people, and they have a Guatemalan doctor that's willing to do it at a cut rate price. He'll fix it for $300. Well, maybe that would be something that we can be doing. There's things, the Menominee Indians, somebody talked to Catherine yesterday about a project that he's interested in here in Wisconsin. There's a lot of different programs that we could get involved with that or community programs, and I'm sure most people know them than me, that have some kind of outward focus toward the community. And a lot of times, for example, if you're doing something, let's say with kids in India where you're learning to speak English, well, maybe then that's something that's on the website and in a little more detail than say, by the way, we have 2 sentences of this. If you have a page on it, you may be starting to attract some people from India to the congregation. Because maybe there's, you know, you never know where, you know, and there's a lot of different social things that could go. So that is the, the two things or three things that I came about with my research was, one, you need to have an outward focus instead of just self-preservation. An outward focus means reaching out to the community and doing what you can. It might mean we need to team up with a Rotary or somebody else to do some of those projects, because there's only so many of us, period, and most people are already, you know, only have so much time. And the other is the 100% importance, rather obvious, that all of our growth comes from visitors. And when that person comes through the door, we really have a responsibility to make them welcome, and then to try to funnel through the internet. So that is the gist of my stuff. I think it's important. I think that's a good point, and a lot of that stuff can go onto a website. I think it's important as a congregation, though, that we have at least a few focuses that we are pushing at a societal level. So I think it's a great idea to put stuff in there, because that may attract people if they're seeing. And you have to have a little depth. A paragraph doesn't cut it with the search engines. Yeah. You know, you've got to have more depth. And I think you also have to have a focus, a little bit at least, on here's 3 or 4 projects that we are actively engaged in. So that you don't go out and overwhelmed, maybe it is teaming up with another organization, but at least it's something that we can be pushing and it can help draw people. Mm-hmm. Well, it's been a bigger trend over the last 15 or 20 years. I think what's going to be somewhat interesting is to see what happens over the next 5 or 10 years as the baby boomers are retiring in force. I know The only other organization I'm involved with is Rotary in Evanston, and that has had a pretty stable population for years. In the last couple of years, it's all of a sudden started bouncing up, and I think it's because people that are just retiring are now starting to look, and you're starting to, and that's starting to happen. The baby boom generation is starting. So, in general, you're absolutely correct, but I think there may be, and it may only be temporary, but there, you know, I don't know. But you're right. We're clearly fighting declining demographics, in general. I think that's a good point. I think that's a very good point. And I, having never been to either of the other places in Madison, I have no clue what their identity is. The only differentiation I personally make is one is very big and one is small. And for me, I wouldn't want to go to big, I'd want to go to small, but I don't know what the third one is, but that's a very valid point. And that's why I think it's important that people at least know we exist so that they visit and see what they want. Yeah, and again, we have to have our own brand on it, and it might be just choosing three or four things that are doable, and, you know.
Go ahead.
All right. Yeah, my one comment is, it's only because I've just gone through this, where we've had some very old websites where the technology for searches has changed, and we just hired somebody that did very inexpensively a new website for us, but some of the things that they do now are completely different, where you want to make sure it's being done with your website that it's not stuff that costs money every month. I don't really go in for that because I'm too cheap with my company. But you can do a lot of stuff, but if we are the only people that are looking at our website, I think we're probably missing out because there is a sophistication out there that goes way beyond what we can do.
Okay, thank you. Gave us a lot of things to think about and act on.